If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are now in tune to the Chat and Shit podcast. Guess what? This is a podcast.
Welcome to Chatting Shit with Big Daddy S-Class and
Big Daddy C-Section.
Oh, like that name, Chegwin. Yeah, I like it, yeah.
Do you know what? Is there an S-Class?
What, of a Mercedes?
Yeah.
I feel like they probably started at A's and now they're at Z.
Well, V. They're up to V.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so they're going to end at Z.
Yeah.
And that's when Mercedes will just fall to the ground and they'll
be replaced by Seat. What car would you get if you could drive?
BMW 3 Series, Yardie Mobile.
I used to have one of them. I've had a couple, boy.
Yeah, he's had a couple. He's been through the cars, this kid.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you, he's not a fucking car.
Please.
And he will never tell... He won't take you calling him a car.
No, because he can't drive.
No, because he can't, but he's a fucking tank.
Yeah.
All right, it's our next guest.
Go on.
This person is someone that's very close to our heart. Not only is he someone we quite literally have to look up to because he's... Well,
six
at least
foot
six,
seven.
Foot six. Yeah, well, yeah, seven, yeah.
Let's go for it.
Of pure comedy muscle.
Yeah.
Not only is he known for his appearances on League of Their Own.
No.
But more importantly, and more vitally, the creator, the writer, the actor, the man behind the BAFTA award-winning TV show, Murder and Successful, a.k.a. King Gary, a.k.a. Tom Davis.
Hoi, hoi. Nice to be here at last.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. Welcome to the lounge.
I've been waiting all lockdown for this.
I know, man. We've been trying to work this out, haven't we?
I've been genuinely waiting for lockdown to last long enough so I can get on this podcast.
That's
I know what you two are like. As soon as lockdown's done, you'll have other shit going on in your life.
Yeah, fuck that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it will be it.
Ask. If you don't ask, boy, you don't get.
How has your lockdown been?
Do you know what? It's a weird one, isn't it? I feel that I've stopped like worrying as much about work and stuff. I've managed to spend a bit more time with my wife. I think she's found it harder than me. Because at first, oh my God, he's going to be at home all the time. Yeah. And now she's like, oh, he's at home all the time.
Yeah. When are you back to work?
When are you going to get the fuck out of the house? So the gardener can come back in here again.
It's a good time though now because it's like it's the sort of crossover period, or it was at least, where you can go out and do a few things, I guess, right? And then but still have time at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can still do stuff over Zoom as well, which is good.
The mad thing is, of course, like Hugo, I don't live in London anymore. And I went to stay at a hotel with the missus for a couple of nights. So we're in London and you forget like just the madness. It sounds because I've brought up in like in and around London, I was brought up near UCPA, but like I was there and I'm like, oh shit, we can go to any sort of restaurant. We can go and fucking shopping and stuff. Where would me and Hugo live? There's nothing like that. Literally, there's like a big retail park.
Oh no.
We were like Krispy Kreme, McDonald's. Like, I text Hugo going, there's a Thai place. There's a Thai place within 30 miles of us.
Well, that's exactly what it was. That's what it was like when I was growing up, though, isn't it? It would be like a, there'd be like a doner kebab place, an Indian and a Chinese.
That's,
you know what
literally
I mean?
What my Just Eat's like. Yeah. There's no Uber Eats or Deliveroo. It's just like...
Every high street in England was basically, or like in the sort of like fucking, like outside big cities, was just like a Scooby-Doo movie. It's just like someone running past and they'd be like, doner kebab, Chinese, Indian. Doner kebab, Chinese, Indian.
That's the little shop. First time you had Thai, it was like, God, it tastes a bit like soap, didn't it?
Yeah. No, it's too much for me, that. Too much.
Like a ramen, just
When
where you live up here and you just go in and ask for a ramen and people think, because every, like, I don't know about you, Hugo, like, all the places I have right around here, it's like old school Chinese. Chicken balls.
It's just beef and black bean sauce. Right?
Yeah, but the one near me does Thai curry and I thought in my head, oh, they must be Thai, but they're doing Chinese. And I ordered it and it was fucking disgusting.
Oh, man.
Tastes like Radox.
They've got on the menu at my one, and it's like new menu, chef special, red Thai curry, green Thai curry. Special, new special. Like, it's blown their mind. They're just like, oh, yeah, no, fucking. So I was down in London at the weekend.
Yeah, and I got some red curry paste. And I'm going to...
I just imagine them in China going, you can go to a suburb, right, and just serve this complete shit and they'll love it.
And it's also, it's like none of it's cooked with any... It's all basically, they got like in Croydon, there's just a massive fucking place. They all go and buy their stuff for their takeaway.
Yeah.
And it's all... No one's like... I remember literally going with my dad to like a Chinese takeaway for the first time and eating spring rolls and going, oh my God, these are so... There's so much flavour.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like fucking deep fried. Like, and my dad was going, this is so fucking nice.
This is
incredible.
Deep is basically just bean sprouts and carrots and pastry.
Yeah, yeah. Like the first moment you tried a prawn cracker.
Fucking
hell, man.
Fucking hell.
They're like really good skips.
Yeah.
But when we went to London, though, and so we stayed in Central.
Yeah.
And we were just like bopping about, doing a bit of shopping, and then going to different places to eat. Where we stayed, I text you about it, Super, like the food was incredible.
Yeah.
And then we came back here and it's just like, oh, fucking hell. It's like, there's just like nothing quite like that here. Do you know what I mean? It's like the palate to people.
Yeah, it's true. That's the only thing that worries me about, you know, because I'm still here, I'm still in London. And obviously the wise thing to do would be to move further out, get a bit more bang for your buck and stuff. But that is the thing that worries me is having a selection of like a different melting pot sort of cultures and food on your doorstep.
Yeah, but I feel slowly that will happen because London's too expensive, man. Like young people, like our parents.
Maybe for you two boys, but I love paying the highest rent in London.
Yeah, and you don't own anything. But young people can't afford to buy shit in London unless you come from our parents, they manage to do it.
Yeah.
But like this generation are fucked.
And also when you looked at like when lockdown happened, I was like fortunate. I was like, fucking hell, like I've got a garden, I've got a decent size house. Like where me and my missus lived before, we lived in like a one bedroom flat in Bermondsey. And I was like, if we'd had a row, like some of the rows we've had during lockdown, like we'd have just been in like one room, just like that, looking at each other like that, vexed, just screwing each other. And now we're like, oh, I'll just go to one room, you go to another, and that, you know, let it dust a little bit.
I think that's really important because I felt that as well. Like, you know, just having being in your place for so long in lockdown, it makes you start viewing your place a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And I am going to be buying soon and stuff, and I am viewing those places a bit differently. Actually, if we live in a world where you're going to be at home a lot more, you sort of value your home time a lot more.
Yeah, and also, you said. Outdoor space here isn't like busy.
No.
Like you can go to the woods. Like, you haven't got a dog, but me and Tom do. So.
Me and Hugo are emulating each other's lives.
Yeah. It's what happens when you move out of London. Yeah, you have to get a dog. But like you're not going to come across loads of people.
No.
You're trying, but you're not. You haven't sold Peterborough to me yet. But
yeah, oh no, you'd love it, man. Yeah, you'd love it.
I've taken up golf right during
that's
during,
it.
Sick.
And number one, it was just like, because I know you boys like your clobber and all that. I was, you know, that thing like where you watch and you're like, man, there's a whole line of clothes that like night cardigans and like shit that I'd never probably wear in any other situation. But like, and I turned up for my first lesson, right? Head to toe in fucking designer golf wear. And this guy was like, wow, you've come to fucking party. Like, this guy, he's like,
I'm serious.
So what's your handicap? And I try and be funny with the guy. And I'm like, probably trying to hit the ball. So he's like, basically, he's like, oh, you know, have a little shot. Let's see what we're dealing with. So I've hit this. And the first ball I hit was a complete fluke. And I hit it and it flew nice and whatever.
Nice.
And he was like, lovely. So it's just like, you know, let's hit another couple. And I hit this other ball. And it came flying off the tire of the club and smashed this woman next to me. And she's like, oh, for crying out loud like that. And I was like, I've never ever played before. And he was like, all the clothes, you know, you look like a golfer. Like genuinely like a golfer. And I was like, well, yeah, and I've jumped, and I had all my own clubs and everything. I'd literally spent,
nearly a grand on clothes
and fucking clubs with no idea of how to play the game.
I'm exactly the same, Tom. It's not just about the act, the thing. It's about everything around it.
Yeah,
like, I'm exactly the same, because as soon as you mentioned golf, I start imagining. Yeah, I'd probably look quite sick in all that shit.
Do you remember when we went and played tennis? We bought like top of the range everything.
Bro, we couldn't even rally.
We
had sweatbands around our heads. We had like all the tennis shorts, tennis t-shirt, best tennis rackets and that. We couldn't even fucking get one back and forth, bro. We end up just chatting.
Chatting by the net.
This is a very useful part of the show for when you need things to do. It's the recommendation part.
Obviously, like I say, you know, we're all sort of in a slightly different stage of lockdown, but I suppose we're all still being at home a little bit more. Have you got any recommendations of things you've been watching, listening to, reading even?
So I started like really highbrow.
Yeah.
When like, you know, good Netflix documentaries, The Last Dance.
Yeah.
And then, like, as it's gone on, my brain has just basically deteriorated. I started watching, have you heard of Below Deck?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say that. Man. Fucking love Below Deck, man.
I've been told to watch that, man.
Sick. I'm obsessed.
I love that shit.
There's three different fucking franchises of it, right? It's Below Deck, Below Deck Mediterranean, Below Deck Sailing Boat, right? Me and my wife watched all three franchises. I'm talking multiple series in about a month. Like, literally, it was like crack. I realized at one point it was a Sunday and we'd watched 8.5-9 hours of just back to back. I cooked like lunch and stuff. And I was just like, mate, this is getting too much now. We can't turn it off. And I've become so invested because you're not having human interaction while this whole thing's going on. Yeah. You basically start really caring. I was going to bed going about Ben the chef, right? He's just not going to end up with anyone. He's never going to meet anyone, is he? He's just never going to meet everyone. Yeah, he keeps falling for the wrong women.
I watched a series where there's a guy, he's like early 40s, but he always has his top off because it makes him look younger because he's ripped.
I don't want to give you any spoilers.
Why don't you explain, Tom, what it's about? What is it? It's a reality show about...
So it's about loads of people who work on super yachts.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah.
And they work like Below Deck. That's what it's named, that incredible name.
And they like do the food and sort out the beds. And then they'll be like, we want to get some jet skis and go to this island, and they'll arrange it all. And
I was like, I mean, I'm like you boys. I'm like, I'm not earning that sweet dough yet. But I'm like, as soon as I get a fucking big paying job, I'm fucking getting all my boys and getting all of them.
Yeah. Getting a yacht.
Do you know what? I'm the same though, Tom, because I go through phases, I think. I go through phasing of watching trash TV and then feeling completely mind numb and then wanting to watch like loads of, you know, like you say, documentaries, but then you sort of end up being depressed because they're mostly about murder
politics.
Yeah, politics, murder, all that shit. So then recently I'm back on my complete moron stage and I'm watching Love Island USA.
I want to watch that, man.
It's the same thing. You start getting addicted and it becomes part of your routine, part of your day. Yeah.
You get invested in them. Like.
Yeah, that's it, man. Yeah. I think we all, as people that work in comedy, enjoy watching, like observing how people like communicate, right?
But that's the real shit. That's the kind of like they come up with the best like jokes. Like that guy, remember where we all watched that documentary about the Scouse debt collector?
Yeah.
And what happened? He said something like he went for an analysis and then his wife came back and said, "You've got a personality."
That was it. Yeah, he goes, read the letter. And she goes, apologies for my Scouse accent. It's incredible.
When I first met you, you said, I can do any accent.
Yeah. And then I went, listen to this. You dirty little Skittle Bear. And you went, wow. What was your name again?
Take my email.
Yeah, take my, and I gave you my card with my email on it.
My extras got. I've been in the back. Yeah, I've been in the background of 1917 and a couple of other big movies.
Green Street.
And you went, "What are you doing?" I went, "No, I'm just doing the voice again."
You know, my favourite thing in life would just be if Sipa was in the background of one shot of Green Street.
I'd love that. In a calf.
Have you seen Married at First Sight yet?
Yeah, of course. Australia.
Yeah, the Australian one.
Yeah, fire. I love that.
I'd say it's the best thing I've watched during lockdown.
Yeah, it's really good, man.
Right, okay, I'll put that on my list. I'm feeling very trashy at the moment.
I like the possessive weird guy who's like he's like a jockey. He's a bit commentator. Like you.
Quite short and possessive.
Oh, mate, Hugo. Wait. That series is good. The next series, Hugo, is incredible.
I haven't seen that.
It all fucking kicks off madly. Like it's fucking like it's like just mental. Me and my wife are sitting there, and I'm like. You know when you just like, we got to the last episode and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to miss these guys.
Yeah.
Like messaging them on Instagram.
Thinking, what are they up to now? Yeah.
I'm a comedian from England. Got quite a few shows together in the cup.
That's my opening gambit. Hi, I'm a comedian from England.
You might have noticed the blue tick. We're all right to talk.
But at the moment, you know what? I've become like, because obviously it's the American election coming.
Yeah.
You just watch it. I've watched that Trump show. And I watched that thing the other night. That's incredible. That's it's on BBC at the moment. It's on iPlayer. It's called The Trump Show. Ah. And it's all about just Trump and his rise to power. It's fucking nuts. It's like genuinely. It's
fascinating,
It's fascinating. It's like, I'm not a big political guy. I know enough to know that Trump's a fucking piece of shit. But like, it is like fascinating to watch him as a human being and go like there's just no conscience there of anything.
Yeah. I think you said it yourself. I think you don't have to be a political guy. Just be right from wrong, innit? He's just fucking mental, innit?
Insanely, how people, he's proved constantly to be, like, a liar and in the wrong with shit.
Yeah.
And, like, have done some fucking dark stuff. And then you're like, but he sort of gets away. And you have to look at it and go, fuck, there's a really good drama on Sky Atlantic called the Comey Rule. With Brendan Gleeson plays Trump. It's like all set around James Comey as head of the FBI. And it's like an incredible show, like drama. But like just watching how Trump's basically like the Godfather, like how he talks to people. It's fascinating, like to see how he deals with people.
It's mad, isn't it? But I guess in a way that sort of works, doesn't it? I mean, if you look at all the different, like you say, within like sort of criminal structures, within fucking political, like Hitler, the Nazis, that shit always works, doesn't it? Yeah. Like someone having a really strong idea and just going with it.
But it's no different. Like, we all grew up in a similar sort of way, right? It's no different than the guy who was the top guy in your group, right?
Yeah.
When you were growing up and it's someone just be like, yeah, we were like, oh, Mark, can't you not coordinate at the weekend? You just get one guy just walk in and go, we'll go and chess it at the weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know if about that. No, we're going to chess it at the weekend. Yeah. And you just follow him along.
And you follow him along and you probably all sort of don't like him.
Yeah.
Sort of narcissistic, powerful.
Yeah, that's just for some reason in human nature is what takes over.
For him, he's just got to a level where it's just like everyone's terrified to say. Like there's one woman who's like, I was so worried about his health, but I didn't want to say anything because he has like a McDonald's every day, right?
Yeah, apparently he has 10 Diet Cokes a day or something as well. Oh.
Yeah.
I kind of respect that about him.
I nearly have a McDonald's every day. But I'm not racist.
I'm not a narcissist, but I mean, you can knock him for a lot of things, but his diet's all right.
That's impressive.
He's good.
How tall are you, Tom? Because in the intro, we said you're 6'6".
I think I'm 6'6" and a half, maybe.
Sick. Yeah.
Wow.
Got that.
It depends on the company I'm in. Sometimes I'm 6'5".
Well, I've had times with you where we're walking along and I was, please crouch a little bit more. I feel well degrading that. On my tippy toes down the high street.
I just thought that was the way you walk to try and look hard.
He does have a feminine walk. He does.
Yeah. All right. Let's strip this back now. Yeah.
Mm.
Tom, talk us through how you started as a creative. Where did it all stem from?
Well, Sipa, what an amazing question. I think it was probably always in me to be creative. I think it was always like that thing. At school, I was always a joker, and yep. I liked. That was my favorite thing. The only thing I liked about school was I generally liked going to school for the laugh and having a joke and everything. School didn't really like me for that. And I think it was always in me to sort of be that sort of thing. But then for years, I sort of just pissed about on building sites and never really took life too seriously. I just sort of always just thought, well, this is just going to be it forever now. So I think it was actually, I suppose it was just, sort of seeing stand up new sort of like Mickey Flanagan and people like that, and then just thinking I want to give this a go. And weirdly, like my first gig was like for Rupert, like that was the first time,
really, yeah,
the first person really to sort of give me any sort of gigs, yeah.
Rupert Magenda, he produces his podcast,
yeah,
absolutely, right, the man,
Magendas,
and then yeah, from there really, it just
but before that, Tom, how did you find out you was funny? Was it like was that your thing, or was it just like?
Yeah, it was
everyone you were around with like that. Was your family like that? Like,
yeah, my dad's a great storyteller, and then like my granddad was like my granddad. If you went around Sutton or Croydon, like Cashel, even if you went to some like, we go like my fact, I've got a lot of Irish family, and you go to like sort of like North London or whatever. But you just know people, and straight away you realise, and when we talk about height, you realise that it's a bit of a defence mechanism, really, because I'm not. Like a fight or anything, I'd sort of always, if I went into a room and whatever, I'd make a wally out of myself as soon as I could, so people knew I wasn't a threat. I'd shake a beer can up so it'd spray all over me and go, "Ooh, look at me!" Fucking melt. Like the club just basically walking around to people going, "I'm not a threat. I look like
I don't want any smoke, guys."
Check this. Just pour the drink in your face.
Fall down some stairs or do a silly
what's that tall guy doing.
Like literally just be doing a robot in the middle of. Yeah, he's not a threat.
But check, I'm not a threat, honestly. Pull your trousers down, shove a banana up your ass. See, I'm insane.
Have a good night, guys.
Fucking hell. Right, so Tom, when you started seeing. Is people like Mickey Flanagan, was that because it just felt like a little bit, I guess, like a looser style of stand-up where he's just more talking and you can sort of relate to him as well because it's from a similar sort of culture to you?
Yeah, I think so. I think because like culturally as well, like that whole, like I've always been a geek. I love comedy. I've always like, my dad is like when I was growing up, we'd have sort of, but then, I think the first comedians I'd know about and all my mates and people on building sites was all sort of Jimmy Davidson or like fucking Chubby Brown and shit like that. Yeah,
some of them ain't that well, have they?
No. I never really liked that sort of stuff. Yeah. And I never liked that sort of, aside the racism and bigotry and whatever, I just, that sort of side felt quite dated, the sort of.
Yeah, that style. Like you say, even without the subjects, just that style of
I think when I saw Mickey and like a guy called Ricky Grover, who's incredible, and I sort of, from there, I was like, oh shit, this feels a bit like they're just telling stories, and there'd be stories that sort of resonated, and I'd had a lifetime of like never really thinking about like where my life was going. I had no long term plan. It was just labouring. Working on building sites, and every now and again I'll go and do something else for a bit just to get away from the monotony of just being like the same thing, like Groundhog Day.
But it's kind of like, because there was no one else around doing anything else, right? So it's just, that's all you've got to sort of be inspired by.
Yeah.
That's what it was like for me as well.
Yeah. I mean, like you become like sort of, you're the fabric from the sort of world you're from, aren't you? And like everyone around me was like, if I'm going to be brutally honest, like when I left school, I was just like, I was really keen to work on building sites. And I think there was a real weird thing within like our media and whatever. And they're like, oh God, did you always want to be a comedian? I was like, I never thought that would be an opportunity that I'd ever get would be to be a comedian. So
exactly. No, right. That's not even an option. It's like, it's so far away. We talked about this on here before. It's like, but that's why it always interests me when someone like yourself, you know, sort of like, that's why the journey always interests me, because it's not like you were inspired by someone that's actually in your life. It's more like you had to have that trigger to go, do you know what? I'm going to actually try and be slightly different here. Do you know what I mean?
And I think the other thing was, it was actually really like people like Rupert and certain other people like James DeFond, who I work with a lot now, and you guys know, I think they saw something more in just who I was. Like, I think it would have been easy to sort of, I remember the first few gigs that I did, I was like trying to be sort of like really playing up the Cockney sort of side of it coming on, and actually they were like, no, you know, that sort of the more sort of stupid, goofy side of you is the side that actually I think, you know, people are going to, it's going to dare you more to a crowd.
Sure.
I think I was more, I think I did a gig for Rupert early on in my career as well, which was like just loads of those sorts of like trying to do those jokes, like rather than telling stories. It's fucking hard, man. It's really hard to do. Street jokes are like the hardest thing to do, like those sort of old school jokes.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask what was, you know, there's one thing being sort of funny in a pub and in a building site. What was the sort of progression when you had to bring it into a more sort of a wider audience, I guess, by going into a, you know, doing stand-up can be for any sort of audience, you know what I mean?
I think one of the big things was like I always thought I was awful at being a scaffolder and a labourer. I was lazy. I was like, I had a really bad, I just never cared about it enough to be any good at it.
That's so what we get along, I think.
Yeah, no, it is probably what we get along.
I've been sacked from every job.
Yeah. And the only reason I was kept around, I think, is because I was made people laugh and I was always taking a piss and having a joke. So in my head, I was like, well, I've been doing this for like nigh on fucking 15, 20 years of turning up at a job or various jobs and holding that job for just fucking being able to tell stories and be silly and joke about. Mm. So all I've got, the first thing was, I've only got to do that on stage for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think when you've done a job where you fucking hate turning up every day, and not just a hate, but you're just like, I don't know, I don't feel
it's
monotonous.
Samey, right?
Has that feeling like,
yeah. And I think, so in the end, I was just like, fuck it. And those, I think the first few months of doing it, I never had any aspiration of like, oh, I'm going to make a big living from this.
Yeah.
It was just to break the fucking, like every day turning up and doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's, and I really loved it. I never felt like, oh, I can't say this or I shouldn't say that.
Uh-huh.
I could just go out and do what I thought was funny, or I was pretty fearless for the first sort of, you know, not fearless in the sense I didn't get nervous, but fearless in, I was really good at turning over material. Like I'd sort of, more so than I am now. I'd go to work on building sites and I'd sit in a porta cabin for like 2 hours, like in the toilet, in the porta loo, just fucking on an old Nokia, just writing jokes and writing stories that I thought were funny. And then I'd just go and do them that night. So now I'm like, oh God, how do I do that? And at the time I was just like,
In a way, you know too much now because you're a part of the industry in a sense. So like, where it was so fresh and it was just like, there was no wrong because you'd never done it before.
Yeah, no one had any expectation that I'd be any good at this thing. And I was told by everyone that I knew, everyone, probably aside James and then Rupert, that it was never going to go anywhere. Like, I was just being stupid even thinking of doing it. Mates now who tell me, like, I always knew you were going to fucking make it. I'm like, you prick. You fucking told me what I was like, you rinsed me for it.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's a lot. That's one of the biggest fears in people doing stuff that they enjoy is like their social group going, no, I don't like it.
Fear.
But that's the thing. A lot of those people can't be blamed otherwise, because we touched on it earlier. It's like if you're from a world where nothing, you don't really feel like nothing's really possible, when someone tries to step out of that, everyone else, that's mental. Why would you even entertain such an idea?
And also, I think people fear like looking stupid or looking ridiculous or failing. I'd always done all of those things anyway. Like, I failed at nearly everything I'd ever tried. I always looked stupid.
Yeah. So it's just nothing like...
No. So I was like, I haven't really got, like... Back. It wasn't like I had... And I didn't have, like, a family. I'd sort of split up with a girl I'd been with for quite a long time. And I sort of pretty... I was like, I got to 30 and I was like, I'm going nowhere. Like, you know when you, like, you got to a point where you're sort of like... Quite a lot of your mates are sort of... settling down or having kids, and like you're going to more and more weddings and more christenings, but that shit's not you. And then you're like, oh shit, like I remember going out and like three of the people I'm hanging out with are like mates that I went to school with, younger brothers.
You're with them now.
Like dancing, like the goofy guy who was dancing on the dance floor had now become like, oh my God, is that someone's uncle?
Going to uni house parties. Who's the old guy with pouring beer on himself?
What are you doing this weekend, Big T? Oh, mate, my mates are at like High Wycombe University, so I'll probably just fucking go down there. I like it.
That's such an important time, though, because that's the sort of make or break time in your life, right? Like when you get to a certain age and you're like, I can just carry on with this shit.
Yeah.
Not that you think you're better than everyone, but you know yourself, you feel that this, you're not getting fulfilled from that, or I can try and make a change, right?
Yeah. But I think like, without talking too like deep and stuff, and I think like, you know, I've had these conversations with both of you, like, I got to a point and I was just like, is this going to be it? And I think I was like depressed. I was drinking. Like now we at that time, like, you know, like now we have these open conversations about like mental health and depression. At that time, if I'd gone into a building, so I'd gone down to the Goat pub on a Friday night and gone, you know what? Fucking life is really hard at the moment. I'm really struggling to get up in the morning. They'd have gone, oh, fucking hell, mate. Don't invite him out again.
Guys, do any of you ever feel anxiety about your future?
Mate, like, even now when I say about anxiety, it's like you're just a nervous Nelly. I'm fucking crippled by it some days.
Pull yourself together.
Oh, it's all in your head. I know it's all in my head. That's the point.
It's anxiety.
I wish I could get out of my fucking head.
I just imagine you going down the pub and someone going, you all right? And you're going, thanks for asking, but no. No one's ever said no.
And they're regretting it, going,
everyone just pulling away from you.
Yeah.
Miserable guy, they're in a public bar since you turned up, sad sack.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yes, you man. You man been on any drillings recently?
Nah, G.
Nah, same, man. Calm. Have you guys heard of the new Beats and Grinder podcast?
Nah, G. I heard it's their man in real life, though.
That's what I'm saying. It's so cotch.
Oh, gee, that sounds so crease.
It is, man, it is. Calm.
Calm, gee.
How did you meet James then? James the Front is someone that we've all worked with together, and he's always been someone you worked very closely with writing. He's directed all your stuff pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Directed loads of sick things, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So he was like, when we were growing up, he went to like a slightly better school and, but like there was a sort of big group of us of a sort of...
So same sort of manner and same sort of...
Yeah, and you know what it's like, guys, like you sort of have... Like he was a bit like, he's a couple of years younger, but also like his mates were... He was more like a sort of like different crowd from Wallington sort of way.
Yeah.
I was more sort of Sutton, but me and him just, I remember just went to a house party. I knew his wife now and her sister. Right. Like, and we just, me and him just were like obsessed with comedy and sort of a bit more like we, you know, like, you'd have mates who are sort of all they talk about is fighting and, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Whatever. Me and him would just sort of sit there and we'd be joking about like Blackadder or Fools and Horses or later on The Office or whatever, and we'd just be doing stuff like that. So it sort of transpired. And then he got a job in TV and I had sort of started doing stand-up. We were sort of separate ways. But then we sort of got together and he was like, look, I want to direct more. And he'd done a bit of directing. And so we wrote some sketches and we went down that road. But he was like he's the most instrumental person in my life, really, of like to see what he saw before I probably did, do you know what I mean? To take that chance to see like where we've turned out now, where we are, and doing King Gary and Murder and Successful and the stuff we're doing with you boys, you're like, fucking hell, that's a hell of a journey. You must feel that because you boys are like,
well, it's the same thing. Just as you're explaining that, it really does sometimes need that person, that other person, to understand that. Like, when I met Hugo, I didn't grow up with him like you did with James, but you know, a little bit later in life, I met someone that was completely out of my circle, but someone that actually was creative and sort of encouraged. Do you know what I mean? In a sort of hierarchical way, just encouraged in a fun way, you know, that fun creativity, whether it was music or fucking around in front of a camera and stuff. But I think, you know, without that, like, sometimes you wouldn't have taken that step. Do you know what I mean?
I think that would change, but that is a sort of, like, with Rupert would probably be like that for me with Hugh, like you are Hugo, like, he was the first person that I'd sort of, without a doubt, once I got inside the industry and I was working, it was the only person who seemed to get the humor. Like, he liked all the same shows. Yeah. Even now, to this day, he's one of the few people who tells me that, saying, and I'll go and watch it. Yeah. But he's also like, there's very few people now where I look at what we've done from when we started to what we were doing with you boys, to what we're doing with King Gary, to other stuff. Rupert always got the ethos of he's probably the person that if he turned around to me and said, don't do that story on stage, I would like never do it again. I'd just be like, oh shit, that doesn't work. I respect him as a comedian, as a man.
I feel like we, the Corrupt FM guys, are kind of like a band.
Corrupt FM guys, nice.
Yeah. I don't know how to phrase it, man.
Yeah.
But I feel it's like a band, you know? And like when I met Sipa, I felt like, I didn't know what it was going to be used for, but I was like, this guy is fucking lead singer of our band, of my band. Not that it's mine, but like, and when an idea was presented, I felt like, oh, sick. Yeah, I know all these sick players that would really work well together.
Because you were instrumental in that. And it's just like what you're saying, Tom, at a very, very base level, it's just the fact that you've got the same taste in humor.
I guess in some ways I'm a bit more like Elton John with Rupert and James.
You're Elton, but
I found that with you boys. I found like when I first met you, Sipa, I was like, this guy. Like, I remember we were at a BBC party and it was just full of like really like networky people. And then I just hit it off with you, and then met Hugo and Steve, like, and that's him. And it's like you guys, when we've been in writing rooms together, which we like 90% of it's never writing. It's some of the funniest times I've had, but.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the thing that, like, as much as all of us, like, the thing that me and James talk about with you boys, I'm like, these guys know what they want. They know the drive of what they want. Mm. More than most people I've met, you're like, and also your standards. I think it's easy to think of, like, us, because we all come from sort of outside the bubble of this sort of media entertainment world. But, like, none of us are sort of, like, the thing I'd say, like, as much as like I fucking love you boys, but the thing I look at you with utmost respect is your standards of like how good you want shit that you do to be, and how you insist upon that for each and every one. Like, and that's where I go, well, I want to work with these boys. Yeah. And I think that's the thing, like, that's important within our industry, and sort of jumping through gears and jumping through like that story for me was the people I have around me now. Rupert and James, like, they, and you know, Andy, like, they're the people where I look at and go, they're the people that like always look like they wanted to do stuff that was different, and they wanted to be like, you know, innovative with, like, is that the right word? I don't know, but they wanted to
put it is now.
And when I've met you boys and started, you know, writing with you, I was like, fucking hell, these guys, like, as much as we piss about in this room and we make each other laugh and like all of it's like it has to be this thing what we're doing has to be good.
Yeah.
And none of us are here for it to be shit. The standard has to, because we're all successful enough in what we're doing. And I think that's the thing that's that, and that I guess is like, you know, like say jumping through some steps. That's the thing, like if you were listening to this, and like I always get asked about, first thing I hate when someone goes, oh, I'm really funny. Like, how do I make in this industry? And I'm like, you know what? I never came to it going, I'm really funny.
No.
I can make people laugh and let me see how this goes. But I never ever would be like, I'm the fucking funniest cunt you'll ever meet in your life.
You'll love this.
Yeah. But it's just finding those people. Like, I can't speak highly enough
exactly
people who, like, even when we did that short film, Sipa, and like, I was like, me and you were pissing about. But as soon as the camera started rolling, I was like, fucking hell, this guy wants to, he wants his performance to be amazing in this piece. Like, he's putting everything into it. And that straight away was like, you know.
Yeah, and likewise. And it's like what you were saying, like, when, you know, we're not exactly the most, us boys ain't the most sociable sort of within the industry, sort of talking to people and stuff like that. But like, when I met you that night at that award show, it was that breath of fresh air. And knowing your background and how you got there and stuff, sort of, it sort of means more to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know you care. It's not just something that's, you know, like, you sort of, you know,
it's not like born into it, ego driven, like,
yeah, no. Yeah, and the same with the sort of type of comedy and the taste, because that's, you know, and that's not saying other things are wrong or whatever, but when there's things that you can relate to, it's good to kind of stick with, because then you both know you're on the same sort of you're on the same journey, and you can,
yeah,
you know what I mean, sort of thing. Yeah.
And it's also, it comes out in the stuff that you want to make, and you're like aside, yeah, like the junk I've been watching and the fucking things about murders, the one constant I've had, and this is a mad thing, like every night I'll stick on like an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, like no matter, like, I just have it on just while, like,
amazing,
you know, my wife's getting ready for bed, and it takes, like, you know, she's like fucking going around doing this and that and fucking talking, and I'm just putting an episode of that on.
Yeah. And
that for me is like the benchmark of, like, if you sit and watch it, it's just, there's like no, as soon as it sounds, there's no jokes. Everything's circumstance. Everything in it.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. Like, and you can now go back and watch, like, you know, when you watch Peep Show and all the shows that we've all chatted about. But when you watch Curb, you're like, that's what they've all jumped from, because the level in there of, like, number one, it's all improvised, like what you guys done or what we did with Murder. So you have a template. But most interesting, it's just like, all they do is just put a guy in a situation, and the situation's a funny situation, but he's never like thinking, oh, how do I make a zinger out of this? And sometimes when I work with you boys, and that's, you know, the sort of spirit that we all have in that situation, is like, when I work with some guy, some people in our industry, you're like, they're straight away thinking of a joke, and I'll have the last word.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, they're not giving to that other person. They don't set you up. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've only ever done People Just Do Nothing and the pilot thing that we done, but I feel
that was the genius of People Just Do Nothing. I said this to Steve once. I was like, I think the genius of People Just Do Nothing is like, everyone got their turn to be funny.
Yeah, man.
And it could be really easy just to go, well, this is so and so. He's going to have all the funny lines, and everyone else is going to be making him funny. But what was lovely was, like, you'd have a moment where Grinders, like, fucking Grinders, Grinders doing a beast of camera, you're pissing yourself. Then Steve's is doing something, and Beats is doing something, and Misha's doing something. And it's like, you know, Chabuddy's like, you know, and you're like, boom, boom, boom. Everyone's firing. And that's so unusual in British sitcom for me, where you're like, fucking, there were six, seven different characters in this.
Yeah, I guess they have the funny idiot, and then like the kind of normal. Word.
And you're right, it's something we were worried about at the start. And I guess, you know, the sort of negative to that is we haven't got as much breathing space as we like, because obviously we're massive fans, like The Office and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now I've come to terms with it. Like, when I've done other things, like, they're amazing as well. But, you know, realizing you can't, basically, in People Just Do Nothing, I get to lean on all these fucking characters. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not there in the water swimming on my own, sort of thing. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's such a blessing to be able to do that. And when and hopefully when people watch it, they enjoy that about it, sort of thing.
But I think that's the thing that you, like, you know, I know with King Garrett, it's the thing that we wanted. We want, like, you know, it's, that's, you're writing it to that audience. You know what the audience is. It's a mass audience. It's like, it's a mainstream show, but you're like, you're still number one, like, the thing that you guys are obsessed with, I'm obsessed with, James is obsessed, is that fucking authenticity. This is what Gary is. This is the world he's from.
Yeah.
And these are but to write that thing, like, is what we're writing a similar thing now. So you've got Gary, you've got Terry, you know, all the different people. Yeah. I mean, what we're doing with you two is like, fucking that. I tell you, like, for Gary, people just whatever. The thing that we're doing, and we can't really talk about much, that's the hardest thing ever, because you've got, probably like, for me, the funniest people, like with you boys, that, you know, working with you, all are funny and whatever. But then you're like, and threaded through, we've got this fucking thriller. Like,
yeah, man.
I said to James one day, I was like, bro, this is like, we should have done Sound Easier with these guys.
It's a fucking challenge, isn't it? Yeah, I never thought about it.
It'll be worth it. I have no doubt it'll be worth it.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Yeah, that's a great point.
Because for all of us, like, this is the first thing that's probably more lent into drama a little bit more, I'd say.
Definitely.
And action.
Action drama, and then just like four idiots stuck in the middle of it.
Quite a lot of topless scenes as well. That's gonna be fun.
You guys never got any clothes on the whole thing.
You're not gonna love that. How was it writing? Because obviously, so the thing that really sort of blew you up was Murder and Successful, right? And that's how I knew about
it. Yeah, same. I watched incredible. It and I fucking loved it.
Yeah, I
knew nothing about it.
And so Murder and Successful and People See Nothing both came out of that sort of BBC Three camp of harnessing new talent, I guess, right? So that's kind of how we knew about each other. When we'd never done anything before that, right? So, you know, you'd obviously had a little bit more stuff like stand up and stuff like that. So when we
Bow Selector.
But When we first got the offered the pilot of the BBC, we were like, can we just improv it? They sort of do it on the day. And they're like, no. There's money at it, man. You can't just fucking turn up on the day. So how was the process? This is a lot of improv, right, on Murder and Successful. And I guess, how did you get it off the ground? How did you convince them? And how was that structured as well?
When it first started, the first time we did it, it was like a scripted piece. Then like someone, like other people had written it. It was nothing to like... I'd sort of had the idea and I'd been in like, and then I sort of didn't know really my place as much at the time. And so I'd been in development meetings and we developed it. And then they were like, oh, we're going to go and do this script. And then the person's going to come in and they're sort of going to read the lines a bit more. And it was a bit more. And we did a script read through and it was honestly the worst thing that you could ever imagine. It was so bad. And then afterwards I was like, look, if you're going to put someone through this, they have to be, they can't know anything that's going to happen, because as soon as you do that, surprise is gone. And everything that, for me, is like, and like when I come back to being like a comedy geek, like knowing how they made like Curb and things, that Larry David would like spin these stories and people in there, some people didn't know what he was going to do. And I was like fascinated in that, and it'd never been done before. And I think like, although I'd done bits, I've been in other people's stuff, I was really conscious of the fact that like, I was ambitious, like, and I still am, but I was very ambitious. But I was like, I looked at stuff and thought, I'm ever going to be at best at the moment is like the goofy mate in someone else's. You know, I'm never going to be the fucking main protagonist in a story unless I fucking make that happen myself.
Sure, yeah.
So James sort of came on a board, and we shot a pilot of it, and it was like, and I was fortunate the commissioner really sort of had seen, I guess, like he believed enough in me to sort of do that. So when we came to putting that pilot together, you know, you're nervous because you're like, what if it doesn't work? Like, because like with you guys, you're improvising, but you all know each other, right? So you're like, oh yeah, I know how Hugo works. With me, it was like every scene's going to be with, we did a pilot with Connor Maynard, and it was like, so I'd never met Connor never met me, and then I just hope this guy's going to, because otherwise this is going to be the worst thing ever. And it worked, and it was, you know, and then you just want to always push the envelope, always make people feel uncomfortable, always make them cringe, and like, as much as like you want like the moments of like the Jamie Lang one where it's like talking about
my wife. That's my favourite one, man. Yeah.
And, and being like, you know, oh, you know, my wife has been sleeping with 12 other guys behind my back. And like watching another and like nearly crying. It, like, because as an actor, it was the hardest thing you'll ever do, because you had to, because sleep became funnier the more pathetic and sad he was. Like, he was never, if he was just trying to crack jokes and he was like a hardcore guy, it was always the moments where it was just like really tragic.
It's quite dark at times. I love that.
He's definitely a tragic guy.
I just always like, I love that show for the fact you could sort of go anywhere with it and take people on a journey. And
it must be so free as an actor to be able to do that. And having a full-blown program where you can see corpses within it, I thought that was amazing.
That was James's idea, and
that's so
because you would never have been able to make it without it. People were just always laughed.
Yeah, and corpses and, like, infectious as well, like for people at home. Like,
but also as human beings, we laugh when things are awkward and we laugh when things are like...
Exactly, yeah.
It's why The Office is so funny, because The Office sort of takes it up another level where they do fake laughter. Like, in the sense of, not like, but within the actual piece, like, you'll see someone tell a joke and someone will fake, like, pretend the joke's funny.
Yeah.
Because so many sitcoms where someone, like, you see a really finely crafted joke that someone will do and then everyone just goes, sort of looks like, people are talking
about
rhythm.
They communicate, they're always fucking telling jokes.
Yeah. Whereas The Office was the first thing where I was like, fucking hell, this is amazing, because people, which they do in real life, if someone says something and they think they're funny and someone goes,
exactly,
walk off. The Office was the first thing I was like, oh, fuck, they're doing that thing that we all do in real life when you get introduced to like, someone and you're like, oh, this is Billy, he's my favourite mate. And they'll go, oh, your favourite mate, you said that about Tony. And everyone will go,
So taking it back before then, when you first started out, there's something with Avid Merion.
Oh, yeah. I did that some weird little thing that we shot, and then we did, Bo Selecta.
Oh,
it was a Michael Jackson special.
Oh,
it was a Michael Jackson, and I played John Landis. So, like, James directed. It was the first big thing James directed.
Yeah.
And he basically, like, showed a tape of me to Lee Francis and was like, look, this is this guy that I know from back where I live, and he's really funny. He does characters and whatever. And then Lee Francis was like, yeah, cool, just... And then Shane Allen from BBC and Channel 4 saw it, and then I just sort of seized that chance, really, just to sort of... I'd never been on a set or in front of camera before.
Wow.
But I was like... And Bo Selecta at the time was like a really... It was a massive show.
Yeah, I was a huge fan.
Yeah, so I was just like, I just got on this. And then just like... I turned up on the day and I sort of... didn't know how to learn lines. I was just like... And he was just like, fuck it, just mess around and say stuff. So I did this scene where I was just doing like... You know, like you guys do, the Talking Heads.
Talking Heads
as John Landis. And I just did like... probably about an hour of just freestyling stupid stuff about Michael Jackson. And all the crew were like, you know, they were laughing loads. And like, you guys, yeah, I've worked with you guys and like heard stories. I know a lot of people who work with you guys. That's the satisfaction. Even now, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll be on set and if the crew aren't laughing, like, I've seen you do this as well, Steve, but like, you're like, oh, fucking, this isn't funny. I need to step it up.
Yeah, the cameraman's not shaking his shoulder as he's on the camera. It's funny.
And then you go on someone else's set and you're like, oh, I'm going to push it. The cameraman's not laughing. They're like, they're not paid to laugh. It's a good indication of shit's funny. Yeah.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you feed off it.
Yeah. For sure.
And also, it's like, if I was working with like people and like they were turning off and no one laughed on set or no one coughed, so I'd be seriously fucking concerned that nothing on set.
Same. I want every scene to nearly corpse. Or we can't even get it.
Or at least the other actor's going to... Like, someone's... You know what I mean? Someone's laughing.
I want to hear someone say, come on, guys. Pull it together, guys. Come on.
Like, imagine if you came off and, like, all the guys that you respect and everyone's sitting going, yeah, that's right, man. That's really good.
You want everyone to be invested in your scenes as well. No one is staring at their phone.
I mean, that must have been an like, amazing experience, though, to start with something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Yeah, he was fucking, even now, but like at that time, he was fucking superstar, man.
It was like, as well, but what the brilliant thing with working with him early on is like how normal he was and like how he, the very thing we're talking about now, he was that guy, like he was making everyone laughed on set. He knew everyone's name. So that was the only education I had of like having to, like when, once I was on set, I was like, oh, that's how you act. That's how you are. Like, I was like, anyway, just how I've been brought up, I guess, by my parents. But actually, Lee's way, and still to this day, the way that Lee Francis is with people is very like indicative of that. He's good with people, and he makes sure that everyone on set feels important.
Yeah,
that's an amazing lesson, and I hear that about you day in day out from every, you know, from makeup team to whoever's worked with you, Tom. And it's the biggest compliment that you're not only that you're funny and you're great at your job, but it's the fact that you are. You know, you make everyone feel included in that and you talk to everyone, which I think is really important.
That's nice to hear, man. Yeah. And I think that's just, that's the easy bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Yeah, it should be, yeah.
Hop it's learning your lines.
Yeah.
We're lucky as well. I think that's the other thing that we all have to, look at is, and like, sometimes it's easy to lose sight of it once you're sort of in this industry and like, we're all fortunate. I look at our life could have been, you know, it's where we are in humanity and at the moment. It's like, not to take this too deep, but you have to sort of go, shit, like I wake up every morning, I work with mates. I work with people that I love being around. I laugh all day. That's a fucking, that's a luxury lifestyle. It's like,
you're old. Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah. Yeah, you're so right, man. And it's good to remind yourself, man. We are lucky. And like you said, not just being able to do something we love, but to do it with people we love as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, not to sound toppy, but it's true. Like,
it is, man. It's fucking, we're fortunate, you know?
So moving on from, I guess, fast forwarding back to now or a year or two ago, whatever, when you got King Gary off the ground, how different was that? Because you went from a sort of BBC Three thing and a few bits on Sky and stuff, right?
But yeah, like, little bits here and there. Of that.
Here and there. But like BBC One, that's like a huge platform and I guess more of a wider taste in comedy that you have to sort of fulfill.
Yeah.
How tricky was that to keep things, you know, authentic to how you like them, but also make sure that they translate to a wider audience?
I think that So Murder and Successful would have been like, that had been like a cult show. It done well. Yeah. But it was like, and it was really critically well received. And like you guys, we'd sort of followed you guys really. We'd like won awards on every series. We sort of culminated in the BAFTA. But
yeah.
So, but when you like, you're moving into that King Gary world, and like, I remember them saying like, what was your next step? And talking to Shane and everything. And they were like, everyone was pitching for BBC Two and these sort of, and I was like, I kind of, BBC One would be an amazing place to make something. I'd grown up watching those sorts of shows. Yeah. Will Family, when it was, you know, Fools and Horses.
Only Fools, yeah.
Yeah, these sorts of shows that the whole Porridge and whatever that the family would sit and watch.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, you know, for a start that some of the stuff that you maybe will be like, oh, you know, the swearing thing, you're like, oh, I'm going to have to try and cut around that because I didn't want swearing in it, but I swear a lot as a human being, so
yeah.
To be more inventive with language.
Yeah.
and then you sort of also, but then you're sort of aware that you're right in saying, there's a really interesting thing that Jerry Seinfeld does when he talks about Seinfeld, and it's like, you're not making it for you, you're making it for people who are going to watch it.
Yeah.
And it's like, so make that to the best of your ability, make that, so in, like, don't get me wrong, I love making King Gary, it's like, it's authentically where I'm from. The people, I've, you know, I get offended when certain newspapers will turn around and say, oh, yeah, the characters are big, too big and whatever. I'll fucking go down something.
Yeah.
And we've actually had to rub a little bit of that off.
Yeah.
But they're out there. And that's your snobbery. Yeah. You don't know these people, but they're the people who are fucking...
It's never the working class sort of people from that background that would ever pipe up about that. It's like you say, it's a journalist of The Guardian going,
yeah.
I wonder if, like, you know, it's a shame. Yeah.
I love the details, man, like his Hugo Boss tracksuits.
Yeah.
All of that stuff's so important, isn't it? Yeah.
Like, the Murder is Successful was an amazing thing to make. But it's the Gary I'm so proud of just because it was so, it's a harder journey, really, to sort of do this and for the figures it's had, for the amount of people who've watched it and enjoyed it. And then when you hear people watching it, like with their families, with their kids and whatever, and you're like, oh shit, that's kind of cool. That, like, I sort of never lost sight of the fact Murder and Successful. It was like, oh yeah, you know, a certain amount of people who are going to watch it and enjoy it, but there's a wealth of people out there who are never going to. And I think, like, yeah, that I get a kick out of that. And I think it's important as well, I think, within the world that we live in, to, as you guys did with Corrupt, and I think that with this country they do it, is translate a world that maybe isn't seen on screen. Like, it's to go, cool. Like, this is something that might be alien to some people out there, but it's life to a lot of people in this country.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to just take stock of that.
Definitely.
And showing the vulnerabilities and emotion in these sort of people that people wouldn't usually understand or mesh with. Do you know what I mean? It kind of shows that we're all the fucking same. Do you know what I mean? Like, so what does the future hold for Sergeant Tom Davis?
For the Colonel.
More King Gary, which is where we're gearing up for now.
Yeah,
and
nice.
And then, like, genuinely, like, I think, you know, the thing I'm putting together with you boys and we're all putting together, I think, is, like, you know, it's a hard thing to sort of, because I think it's like nothing else that's ever been made, which excites me in the same way that Murder did. I look at it and think, like, you know, I've made no secret, I wanted to work with you guys for as long as I've known, and even like I was a fanboy of the show.
Yeah, same.
And
yeah.
I think like knowing like those scripts that we've done and that world that we're creating there, that's fucking exciting, man. And it's exciting as well because I think like how we've all of us have grouped together and made this, like put that thing together as scripts, and how I know it's going to turn out. When I know, like when we first shot that taster, I was like, fucking hell, man, like no one's going to see this coming from us.
Yeah.
Like this, and like now we've pushed the scripts and we've been ambitious with it.
Yeah.
And I think there's something slight, I think it could be really special. And I think that's like, I'm, you know, like I say, lucky, come out the back of what we've been through this year.
Oh, it's
like exciting for next year to hopefully
get I'm super jobs. Excited, man. Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, man.
2021's everyone's year, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it hasn't got much to live up to after this year.
Yeah.
It's like a shit birthday where your fucking parents have turned up and said, yeah, we got you a frog this year. I wanted a bike. And we're going to ride a frog to school.
Yeah.
The sandwich. What's your favorite sandwich?
And on that note, Tom, one of the most important questions we ask all our guests is, what's your favorite sandwich?
Oh, man. Fucking hell. How do you
go with this one? Because I know you're a sandwich guy.
Yeah, I love this good sandwich.
You're a food connoisseur.
You know what, man? It's all about meats, right?
Yeah,
I could spend a long time on a deli counter. Tuna, ham. Yeah, right.
Tuna ham.
Tuna ham, right? Chicken, load of salt. You got a really salty butter, right? Thick, white tiger bread.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm in it.
The best.
Yeah.
And do you know, like, mate, got that garlic mayonnaise you can get. That's the bollocks, man.
Aioli.
Aioli. Spanish mayo.
Little cherry tomatoes chopped up.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Really nice. And then the secret ingredient to anything in the world, right?
Yeah.
You like really cheap cheese that they put in Big Macs. And
really
cheap cheese.
Craft.
Wallop that in anything in the world is going to taste better with that.
Mm. I agree, man. Craft cheese is fire.
Wait, do you know what? Because it's you, Tom, I'm going to... I want you to describe your favorite soup in the world as well, because I know you're famous for this.
Mate, this is the best. And I generally, like, people query this and I get a lot of shit. This is, I don't get trolled about it. Like,
people think you're joking, but
And people troll me about it and they're like, you're disgusting. Tomato soup, it must be Heinz. I cannot say that enough. It has to be Heinz. And Wotsits, but you know what the game changer is? Giant Wotsits.
Right.
They take a little bit longer to soak the soup up.
Okay.
And then you do the spice. I mean, Seaford, I know you're a man who likes stuff that's a little bit outside the norm.
Do spicy giant
Wotsits, yeah? For those with a bit more of a culinary taste, wallop them in. Honestly,
the winner.
Do it. And people frown at me when I have that in a restaurant.
In your own Wotsits.
But I say to everyone, I say, you fucking try it, Manny.
Well, I saw you had it today, innit? Did you have a little sandwich on the side? Or was that toast?
Yeah, I had two cheese toasties as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a few little grill marks on the side, I saw.
Oh, mate. And George Foreman.
Yeah.
Foreman, man. Change
healthy,
the game.
Then. It's healthy.
Yeah.
I did it in the George Foreman. Oh, that's fine. It removes all
the... Oh, you had a grilled sandwich on the... Oh, okay.
Yeah. Eight slivers of cheese I had in it.
Does that take all the carbs out? Yeah.
Lying on a gurney in fucking 43. It was all made in a George Foreman.
I don't know what's going on.
The three questions.
All right, Tom. And then also now, find the final part of the show is probably one of the most important parts.
Yeah.
Is you've got to ask us three questions each.
Wow, three questions each.
Yeah.
Super, first one for you. Okay. When did you know that you were going to become an icon?
Oh, hello. Okay. when was it? I think it sort of hit me probably the time I met Hugo, because the way he looked at me, I saw the look in his eye.
Yeah.
And I thought, do you know what? I'm fucking special. Because the way this guy is crying laughing in front of me, I'm
kidding. He's the only person that doesn't think I should be sectioned.
He's the only person that doesn't call me a freak.
Hugo, for you? Big Hugo. What do you prefer making, music or comedy? You're sick at both, which is...
I think I prefer doing TV stuff, comedy. Yeah, I find the journey really fun. Like, even though I might moan at the time, like of getting up at 4 a.m. and them only having vegan bolognese left or whatever, but I do love just the whole process of filming and then seeing the final product, and then when people get to watch it, man, it's sick.
It's cool.
Yeah, I love it.
I guess it's more fun for you in a more sociable way, right? Because we're all fucking around.
Music's quite isolated, and I feel more insecure about music. I always question if I'm good or if it's good.
You're like naturally one of the funniest people I've ever met. Like,
oh, I don't know.
I have a way about you. Just make me look. Yeah. Both you're just naturally funny in different ways, but you're both like so funny. It's just like that's a nice thing of like sense of self. That's what comedy is for me. It's like, and also it's like, I think like with you, Hugo, you just got a turn of way of being. With you, Secret, it's like, you're like one of the most open people like I've ever met.
Yeah, definitely open.
And like similar to like when I met you, I remember saying to James, like, fucking Superman, it's like me. He like, it's like everything that's ever happened to him, he doesn't really have any fucking filter of like worrying about, like, so you know when people say to me, like sportsmen sometimes say to me, like, God, don't, like, why would you tell that story about you shitting yourself on a golf course?
Yeah, yeah. The good thing with Seeper is he's always transparent. Like, there's never like, he'll be quiet and you can ask him what's wrong and he'll tell you. There's not like man.
It leaves me with a bit of a almost disease in a sense of like, I can't stand any falseness or if there's a vibe change, I'm really sensitive to that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think it's good because there's no elephant in the room.
No.
Yeah, apart from you, Hugo.
Yeah, apart from, well, I'd say you at the moment.
Yeah, it's me now, yeah.
Yeah.
But Sleeper, next one for you. I'll be snappy with these.
Okay,
Sleeper, what is the best bit of food you've ever eaten in your life?
Oh man, fuck it, that's a real tough one, man. There might have to be a couple, you know, like mum's cooking is your mum's cooking, isn't it?
Yeah.
So like, my favourite food from my mum's cooking is a thing called kibbeh silek, right? Which is, I'm not going to go fully into it, but it's just a Kurdish dish of like sort of rice and mince balls stuffed with mince in like a tomato sort of sauce.
Oof, nice, yeah,
it's
nice.
Banging. But that's a proper comfort food, isn't it? But like, do you know what? Maybe Vietnam. Like one of the meals I had in a little sort of fucking
off a moped
side alley.
You're like so deep now when it comes to the food. You become like a real culinary guy.
Yeah.
I'm full of a little fucking. Yeah, it's probably fucking 2018. Okay. Fucking
My dick still gets hard of Fernando's, man.
It's not even the flavour of the broth. It's the smell of the fumes. It's the people. It's the
journey.
You know, I don't even think it was a restaurant. Just a small family opened their door.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm pretty sure a fucking 5-star restaurant's the better.
No. All right, here you go. Next question for you. Fast car or big house?
Or a big house.
Oh, man, you've got both of them, I know that, but I just wanted to ask you, wouldn't you?
No.
It shows how well you know him, though, Tom, because each question did throw him off.
Yeah.
Materialistic. I'm going to take it deep for the last question.
All right,
come on.
Really deep. Yeah. Right, for both of you, would you rather have, like, an incredibly, like, muscular, fucking incredibly muscular physique, right? Yeah. Or just the ability to be able to run really fast?
Incredibly muscular physique.
Yeah, 100% the physique. I don't give a. I'm never running. Run for what? I've got two cars.
Yeah, I wouldn't need to run if I had an incredibly muscular physique.
Yeah, exactly. You got one of those electric scooters.
I know. Like a guy with diabetes, and he just needs to go around because he's so fat.
He's so well in shape, but he can't move.
Before you even gave me the other option, I wanted to go,
No. I'd just like to be muscular. 100%.
I'd love that. Well, listen, Tom, mate, thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, thank you, man.
You've been amazing.
Yeah.
Round of applause for Tom Davis, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
Woo. Boy, this is the first time that we're actually recording an outro straight after the episode.
Yeah, I know. It's It's good. Keep the momentum.
Yeah, Matt. You got the endorphins flowing?
Oh, yeah. Like a dolphin.
Yeah, good. Yeah. A little bit of blood rush to the tip of your penis?
Always. It never goes.
Never goes back down. Perfect.
Yeah.
And that's how I like you.
Yeah, massive bell end, but the rest is pathetic. Nice.
Yeah. Hugo, the guy, the really short guy with the purple bell end.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Good guy. But yeah, man, big up Tom Davis for coming on, man.
Yes.
He's basically like family, so, you know, yeah, really appreciate him coming on. Had a lovely chat.
Yeah.
Learned some
chin wag.
Yeah. Hope you lot learned some things out there. And it put a bit of a smile on your face, didn't it, Hugo?
I can't stop smiling.
Like, I know, yeah. Looking down at your cock, smiling.
Well, yeah. I'm smiling about it.
There's nothing to smile about with that.
Fuming at God.
Yeah. Well, big up Tom David.
Yeah, big up Tom.
And check out King Gary. I think it's on iPlayer at the moment.
Yep.
You'll see him on League of Their Own as well.
The League.
Of Their Own.
Yeah. Just thought I'd add a little bit.
Yeah. No, I like that, man. Yeah. And Match Room podcast as well, a boxing podcast that he's doing.
Yeah.
Ramesh podcast is coming out soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Guy's unstoppable.
Check him out at Mr. Big Tom D. That's his Instagram.
Yeah.
Got everything you need to know there. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you ain't got Instagram, download it. It's sick.
It's free.
You put photos on it. What else do you do with it, Hugo?
If you haven't got it, don't get it. That's actually what I would say.
Yeah, well, no, just in case we can get a sponsor out of it or something.
Oh, loads of stuff, man. You get free T-shirts and weed.
Yeah, that's what they throw at you. Yeah.
Well, we get free stuff from Instagram or the actual company.
Huh? Well, no one's giving us anything.
No.
Not you anyway, not your physique.
Before you go, I got a weed pen from Barcelona from the cookies guys.
I stay away from that, boy.
Yeah, you need to with a mind like that.
Yeah. How are you getting over the munchies then if you're dieting?
Mind over matter, mate. Strong mind.
Yeah.
Strong mind. Well, it's like 9:30, you're having your second dinner.
Yeah, I'm having a little jacket potato, yeah.
Just a little jacket potato.
Just keep myself going, innit?
For how long? Beans. Huh? What's your bedtime?
Well, I need to keep myself going till about 12, don't I? It's 9:30 now.
Do you go to bed at 12?
Yeah. And then I wake up at 10. What about you?
I fucking hate you. I go to bed at 12 and I wake up anytime between 6 and 8.
Oh, mate. Now, you need to start going to bed about 9 now.
It's long, though.
No, because Joe Wicks was talking about it, man. He's got like little young babies and that, and he feels great.
Yeah, but all Joe Wicks does is burpees and then says you can eat.
Well, fucking hell, maybe take a leaf out of his book, boy. Look at the state of you.
If I want to do burpees well.
Yeah, exactly. And if you want to feel like, he says, if you go to bed at 9, you don't have the stingy feeling in your eyes when you wake up at 6.
He's chatting absolute shit. Look at him. Of course he doesn't feel anything when he gets up. Fucking hell. He's never done anything wrong.
We'll try and get him on here as well. He's my boy. Big up the body.
I do really like him. He's really likable.
Yeah, he is. He loves The Office as well, man.
Does he?
Yeah. He sends me voice notes. Hold on. Check this.
Super, I'm fed up. Sometimes I think this place is a right shithole. Who thinks Neil's more of a laugh than me? Well, you're having a laugh saying that. Right, that's it. We're going out for a beer this lunchtime. Yeah, I'll show you the laugh.
I just get them from him just like 3 times a day sometimes.
Sick.
Yeah, it's back and forth.
Big up Joe Wicks, man. Yeah, man. Although he's never, ever felt like shit in the morning.
He ain't. And we're going to have to get him on to ask him about that, to be fair.
Yeah, I want to know if he's ever not had a solid shit.
All right, we'll get him on. We'll get him on.
All right, go and eat your... ask him... Voice note him now and say, is it bad that I'm having jacket potato?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to now.
Go on.
Easy, mate. Just on my podcast with Hugo.
Hey, man.
It's 9:30. Oh, you're right. It's 9:30 at night. And because it's sort of cutting into my dinner time, I just thought I'd have a second dinner. Thinking of having a little jacket potato with beans, some cheese and some coleslaw. Hugo just wanted me to ask whether you think that's bad. Just get back to me when you can. Cheers, mate. Hugo?
Yeah.
Say bye.
See you later, Joe.
There you go. I'm going to have the confirmation. And it's going to be your fault. If he says no, it'll be your fault. I'm starving. I can't survive till midnight.
Send that over. Send his response over.
I will, definitely.
All right.
All right. Nice one.
Good night.
See you later, boy.
Safe, man.
Get some sleep.
Hey, yo! Will everyone shut the fuck up? I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
Nah, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendie.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout out all the posse down at ACAS Laboratory. Hip-hop, am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.
All right, so I just got a message back off him, and he goes, oh, you're odd. 9:30 p.m. Yeah, mate, it's a classic Spud-you-like dinner. University dinner, innit? So he approves.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Tell him what you had for breakfast, dinner, and...
No, he just thinks it's my normal dinner. Anyway, I've got to go and eat it. It's getting cold. See you later.
Okay, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.